Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
With the music, I was in mid Tootsie Roll and was like, "Ain't you gonna start today?"
Yeah, it's like singing with the headphones on and realize someone's in the room watching you. Like, wait a minute, what?
Right. And you thought you was getting down, and you wasn't.
You wouldn't. I was scared. I thought the default music was going to play. You know, and that's the last thing we want to happen up in here is for that.
Right.
For that elevator music to start rolling in.
Well, you know, it's been one of them week and a half.
Hello, amen, and pass the ammunition. So, good evening, America. Good evening.
Evening, y'all. I beg your pardon?
I said, come on, is what I said.
You're going to learn today. You're going to learn today. Ain't nobody in here called Camel.
My
Teddy
fancy
Ruxpin,
fancy
I will cut
car.
You where you stand. Can you hear me? I will cut you where you stand.
See, it's not my fault. My fancy dancy car, I can push a button and say what I want it to do, and I ask it to call you. It always repeats back. I said, call Kamal Larsoul. And it says, calling Camel Larsoul? I'm like, okay. You know, my car is made.
I know. I understand.
My car is made in Korea. It, you know, I can't.
Then don't repeat
it. I can't be held responsible. I can't be held responsible. So, look, we're going to cover a lot this evening. We have a guest. Very special guest that will be on in a few minutes. Very influential.
Hello.
very influential. I can't even speak this evening. Brother here in Baltimore, Donnie Glover of BeMoreNews.com. Is one of my social injustice mentors and is doing big things here in Baltimore. And not only Baltimore, but in America and in Maryland, and want to introduce you all to him. I've been on his show a few times. He has a radio show here in Baltimore where he speaks the truth and holds people's feet to the fire because it needs to be done. And some of the things we try to do here on this show is hold people's feet to the fire on a national level. But just so everyone knows, we're going to cover this evening.
Right, and we have your brother who is a foot doctor, so we got it.
Yeah, my brother, the foot doctor, the optometrist. I'm surprised you're not trying to make him an OBGYN, but that's a whole other issue.
That's your dirty mind.
So right off the bat, I see Donnie has joined us. I'm going to add him to the queue. Mr. Glover, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Nightlife of Circle of Sanity. How are you doing this evening?
Good evening. Good evening, fam.
Hey, Mr. Glover. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing. How you doing?
Oh, we're being cool. We had a hot show earlier this morning. There was
what
an incident of...
Let the people know.
Uh, there was a group of students at Towson State, which is not in Baltimore City. It's in the northeast part of the area, a non-African American area, and they seem to they've been pushing some sort of hate rallies, but it's been garnering more and more attention. And so we talked about it today, and I essentially said that I don't understand racism, because if you really think about racism, it doesn't make sense. That's like the great 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 grandchild telling the great 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 grandparent what the deal is. And that just don't happen where a lot of us come from.
Well, you know, saying like it is,
you're talking about
2013,
right?
Yeah, 2013.
Last I checked. Now, back in my day, and I'm like an hour and a half older than Donnie, I went to Morgan State University, and Towson State University, on some level, can be called Morgan's sister school to some degree. But in the 70s, the legislature of Baltimore, of Maryland, made both schools state universities. But all the money in those days went to Towson, and Morgan, being a historically black college, was always the little sister of the poor. We didn't get the money that Towson got. We didn't get the nice football field and athletic facilities. We were always downplayed. So we called Towson the white school. Howsoever, it wasn't segregated down straight line. There were black students at Towson. There were white students at Morgan. But the disparity in the funds allocated out of the state capital were blatant. Were blatant. Obvious. So
the black schools got to beg for money, and the white schools get money with no problem. They get extra money. And that was one of the things that came up. This white guy was saying essentially that everything is even, the playing field is level. And I'm saying, why don't you stop being stingy and selfish and share the resources? You can talk, you know, we were talking about sentencing disparities and criminal convictions, and and I'm not a victim. I'm not at all trying to make the case for us as a victim people. However, if you don't play fair, treat everybody the same. And everybody, most black people I know it's not the same. And so my question to these intellectually sophisticated people with all of these degrees is, what's the problem? You know, when are you going to deal with your illness? Because racism, to hate somebody simply because of the color of their skin, that's something demented. That's not normal. It's really not. I don't think so.
No, it's not. But it's a learned response. It's a learned response.
Yeah.
You know, because you take kids today. You take children today at 4 and 5 years old, and they don't see color. I'm always amazed to see kids 15, 16, 17, kids going to proms today, going to parties today, and they don't look at the white kids versus the black kids. Not in Baltimore County, not in the areas I travel in too much.
Well, you're right.
Yeah, in the city, you do it. You see it, but not.
But
so
their
much
parents
the
and their grandparents do.
Well, I mean,
you know, let's be real. We still have segregated proms in some parts of this country.
In some parts of the country, we do. Yes, we do.
Mississippi just ratified the end of slavery.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Mississippi is on the cusp. They're on the leading edge.
If y'all
ain't say nothing, they weren't going to say nothing.
Right, they were just like, they ain't going to
find out. Don't say nothing.
You know, they don't read, no way.
Sadly.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Sadly.
Right. If it ain't a TV show about it, we're not going to get worked up about it. Now, I know Kamal's a big fan of the show Scandal. She's one of those Scandalites. I never watched the show, but you want to talk about Scandal. 2013, Mississippi hadn't ratified slavery yet. I think that's a scandal.
I think Johns Hopkins taking Henrietta Lacks's cells and making millions and millions of dollars and not giving
her family
any of the proceeds. I think that's scandal, too.
That is scandal.
Yeah, that is a scandal.
I think in New York City where they dropping morning after pills on 14-year-olds without their parents' permission is a scandal, too. I got a bunch of them.
I think Republicans not wanting birth control or sex education taught in schools and not in advocating for anti-abortion laws across this country, but not wanting to adopt any children other than white children that are children of deceased family members is a scandal too. You can't
or cutting the funding for programs to help people get out of that situation.
They don't like us. They hate us. They want to eliminate us. I'm very clear. And on Be More News, you know, I try to be palatable and open to all people, but I'm very clear at the same time. This is a war. As soon as a black child is in the womb, it's war. It's war on black people. It really is.
The odds are stacked against them. But yet they grow and see through all of that, whereas we didn't. You know, we were told every day there was. I still remember my mother saying to me quite distinctly, one of my best friends, when we grew up, she said, he'll never have a problem finding a job. If you two walk in the door, he'll never have a problem finding a job, whereas you might. I just didn't believe it, couldn't see it, so I became a teenager and an adult. But through all that, there are people on the white side of the fence who are just as giving and learning and wanting to understand and make things better as there are black people on this side of the fence who want to keep things bad. And
who don't know slavery is over.
Exactly. I just watched Django
last
night.
We know a couple of them.
I just watched Django last night, and there are plenty of Stevens walking around here. There are plenty of Stevens walking around here.
Well, as you know, we had a protest on the Django dolls. We were a part of an effort to take dolls off the shelves because we felt as though they were a slap in the face. First time in the history of America they were manufacturing slave dolls.
Who was selling these dolls? Mattel?
I think the company was Nelco.
Okay.
But they're no longer on the shelves. They took them out of distribution. The interesting thing was the responses. Some people felt as though it was art and expression, and that kind of, you know, alludes to your point earlier about the young people seeing a more colorless society. I'd rather have the truth. I'd rather have a Harriet Tubman movie. Interestingly, on similar lines, I saw the Dave Chappelle interview on Oprah speaking to the feminization of black men in comedy. And it just, you know, as we do have mega producers with mega dollars, it's really imperative to up the bar and begin producing some films that do a better job at telling the beauty of the black experience, because if you let other people tell our story, all you're going to hear, all we seem to get from them is blacks as slaves. Black people were doing things even while slavery was going on, both in the United States and internationally. And one of the things that we were talking about on the show was this this new documentary, Hidden Colors, Part 2. Both 1 and 2, they go into how Africa essentially gave civilization and culture and language and medicine and science and technology and archaeology to every nation on Earth.
But
we
see, you know what? Let's not get it twisted, though. The only color Hollywood cares about is green, and that's just the bottom line. And it's not just incumbent upon producers and directors and writers. It's incumbent upon our community to support these movies, because I can cite movie after movie after movie that portrayed African Americans in a positive light that did zero box office. And not literally zero, but very low.
Well, let's start looking at the fact that we are making more dollars than ever before. And let's take it back to Oscar Michaud back in, the early part of the 20th
century. Yes, so all the way back to 1917 with Oscar Michaud and the Lincoln Company. I'm well versed in this particular topic.
Well, I'm just saying that at this point, we should be owning the distribution and manufacturing, just like in the music industry, ownership. When I look at nationally, Michael Bazin down in Atlanta, Frank Ski here in the region, the Big Fat Morning Show, these are popular radio hosts. But each one of them were popular audience. Just let me finish this point, that each one of them got snatched. And although they had 600,000 people following them on Facebook, their radio platform was taken. And it's often because we don't own the media outlet. I think it's time we do a better job owning, because we certainly have the money. We have athletes making $100 million. Let alone the ones that are broke by 40.
We should, and it wouldn't be the first time that we've tried. And the person who gets the most criticism in terms of black filmmaking is the closest one to realizing the dream that you are speaking of, and that Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry is this close to owning
everything. See, people really give Tyler Perry a hard time because of Madea and what have you, but people don't understand his business acumen.
I'm not sure it's worth trading the image of the dude in the skirt.
Let me finish my point, please. If we are talking about owning, he's almost owning. The only thing that he does not have is the distribution. But he keeps the money in the community. He hires blacks. He has his own studio. He writes the music. He does the directing. He does the producing. He does the writing. And he gives people a bone. He's not like Spike Lee. You know, Spike Lee will complain about not getting.
Come on, man. Come on.
No, you got to let me finish. I let you finish your point, and I will back it up with the fact. I will back it up with the fact. I'm not saying that Tyler Perry is a better filmmaker than Spike Lee. That is not my argument by any stretch of imagination.
I just
want
to take the skirt off. I've had enough of the skirt. What I am saying is that every single time
Spike Lee has complained about lack of black representation. When people say, okay, Spike, you're right, let's do this, this, that, and the other, he is the one who takes the work. He doesn't spread the work. Tyler will spread the work, skirt or not.
He does take care
of our community from that regard.
Well, I will say at the same time, we're quick. When Spike first came on the scene, 83, school
86,
days.
Actually.
He was a national phenom. And he certainly was providing opportunities for people who otherwise would not have had opportunities.
And I'm not taking that away from him.
You cut
I'm
me
talking
off.
About
it's
moving
my turn.
Forward. When he complains about it, he keeps it
me off. He did. He was very good at creating opportunities for people. And me, I'm a fan for life. I'm not throwing them out. I think somebody better make some noise. And I think, honestly, when you got all of that money, more money than God, take the dress off, you know? Because as a black man, I'm insulted that you're telling me the only way we can get on television is with a dress on. You ain't got to put the dress on no more.
That's not even remotely true. That's not even remotely
true. But that's my opinion.
Well, let me interject here.
Very much my opinion. He can kill a skirt.
Let me interject here before we go completely sideways on the issue. My biggest problem with Spike and Tyler and a few other people in between, I want someone to produce and direct and distribute a movie about the black experience where there is no singing, dancing, people at a nightclub, or someone sleeping with somebody else's wife, or fighting going on.
Right, and I can give you that example. Akilah and the Bee had none of that. And we did not support that movie.
But that's that goes to my second
point. And that's
point.
The point I'm
I
making.
I don't want these movies to be tailored for us, but to be about us.
But that
right,
was
everyone
about
thought
a black
John
girl
was
who was
going
smart.
To be
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe,
it was about, but you're not listening to my point. I hear what you want, and I'm telling you that you have been provided with that, you as a community have been provided with that on many occasions, and we as a community have not supported it. Secret Life of Bee, yeah, it was a story of a white girl, but there were wonderfully rich black women characters in that movie. We did not support it. Period.
I think it's time that we stop maybe looking at the current model. I think a lot of times we might be better off as we were in the days of segregation, but we're so fast that we want to integrate. And this is what I mean. Hollywood has not worked for us. Maybe it's time to create our own and link up with African nations, Nigeria, Ghana. Maybe it's time to just move past, because black actors never really get the due that they deserve, because it's typically white people doing the judging as to what's a good movie and what's not when it comes to the award ceremonies. Maybe it's time to just do our own thing.
But do you know why it's mostly white people voting?
We don't control it. It's not our system. It's not our world. We should create our own.
Well, the voting body are past winners.
Right,
so.
Like Frankie Beverly and Maze. Frankie's never really won one of the major white people's awards. So let's just create our own and stop trying to assimilate and try. Like they gave Django an Image Award. An Image Award? You twist history and you give it an Image Award before the movie even comes out. We have to remember sponsorships that even like in what I do in producing news, black news, real black news. When you tell the real truth, advertisers, you know, corporate, white, what have you, they shy away from it because nobody really wants the truth. They only want a watered-down version of reality.
Unless that reality involves black-on-black crime or black-on-white crime. Then they want the raw truth. Seemingly.
Well, I've said my piece on Tyler. I mean, you know, he is what he is, but he's pimping the system.
Very talented.
And he's working. He is the person right now that has the best ability to provide what you want. That's
take
all
the
I'm
skirt
saying.
Off.
That's all I'm saying. But I mean, does he have
I
to take
agree.
The skirt off if he has a studio? If he has his own, it doesn't matter if he has his skirt on or not. If
to
he
you,
has a studio,
to you, but
somebody,
I have a son. I really ain't
somebody,
thrilled about my son or my daughter.
Okay, but here's
seeing
what
a grown
I'm saying.
6'5" man
saying.
In a dress. I mean, that's
but here's
just
what
sickening.
I'm saying. But here's what I'm saying. You're not even listening to me. Regardless of what the man wears, the fact remains that he has his own studio. And somebody,
the dope man got his own
a black person, a black person could make the kind of movie that you want in a black studio, possibly through a black distribution arm.
This
so
is good, but see, check this out.
Because he chooses to wear a skirt, you don't want
to
use.
See, this is why I'm not impressed.
Because he chooses to wear a skirt, you don't want to use.
Let me tell you exactly why I'm not impressed.
That's ridiculous.
Let me tell you exactly why I'm not impressed. When you look at the $1 trillion in African American spending power that we have as a people every year, Tyler Perry, it should be 100 Tyler Perrys. We get
but
a crumb.
Isn't.
No,
there
you
isn't.
Cut
there's
me off.
One.
You cut
and
me
so
off
why,
this time.
Why disregard the one who could possibly make two or three?
Let him have his say, Kamal. Let him have his say. Let him have his say. Go ahead. Go ahead, Donnie. Go ahead. Yeah, I think we lost Donnie.
Oops. I apologize if I'm the reason that we lost Donnie.
Well, his frustration is not going to deter my show. So I think you both have valid points and think you both had valid points. And, again, my issue with Tyler has nothing to do with the Madea character because,
mm-hmm.
as you and I have discussed offline on several occasions, the whole cross-dressing comedic thing is older than black comedy. It hasn't been hijacked by black comedy. We can go back as far as Some Like It Hot, Monty Python. We can do, you know, more modern day Flip Wilson and his characters.
Milton
Berle
is one
Geraldine.
Of the most famous cross dressers.
Yeah, Milton Berle, Rudy Giuliani, all these great comedians cross dress. Dennis
Keaton.
Rodman, as Corbin just said, Dennis Rodman.
Solid.
But,
and let me say, I apologize if I'm the reason that Donnie left. I'm just as passionate about this as he is. We're just coming from two different places, and I hear his frustration, and I see, from my perspective, a possible way to alleviate that frustration and the fact that because he has a problem with Tyler Perry wearing a dress, which I'm not saying is wrong for him to have that opinion, but that just totally means that he doesn't think that anybody should work with Tyler. I don't understand that.
Well, and to your point, the Spike Lee issue, my personal feeling is Spike Lee makes better documentaries than he does movies these days. But that power can certainly, you take the power of Tyler and the power of Spike and those in between, if we work together, then maybe we would
right.
get movies where there's not someone, not a man in a dress, not the real housewives of Atlanta drama that are in some of these shows. And to me, no musical or no step competition or no dance
right.
competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me a movie.
Or
a give
music
me a black movie produced by black producers and a black studio that is on the same lines as a Skyfall or on the same lines as Wanderlust or you know, what's the movie that's out now that everyone is.
But I'm telling you, for that to become the norm, we have to support the film, whatever that film is.
Yeah, we do. We have to, but someone has to take the risk, too, because when you get a black movie, and you know this better than I do, Kamal, a black movie has to make money. White movies, not so much.
Right,
white movies
exactly.
come out 600-700. There's 600 or 700 movies a year, right, that are produced and drop in movie
and like,
theaters
and
go straight to
and
DVD.
And on average, 11 of those films will be quote unquote black films on average.
Right, and of that 11, 2 or 3 may be a quality movie.
Two or three may be a quality movie, but I can guarantee you that when it's Akilah and the Bee versus, you know, Booty Call wins every single
right.
time.
Right.
In
and
terms of dollars. And so Hollywood scratches their head, and they're like, well, what the hell? You know, we gave them what they've been asking for.
And
they didn't even
again,
buy tickets for it.
Right. But the problem to me is when you give us 11 and 2 are quality and 1 makes money, and you produce 600 other ones that you don't care whether they make money or not. They can be utter trash, and they may be in the theater for an hour, or they may go straight to DVD. Those movies get made. If you give Black America, a black director, black studio, black actors, or even white actors, produce 200 movies and say, I'm going to give you these 200 movies. I don't care if they make money or not. We're just going to keep year after year giving you 200 movies. Eventually, and it won't be overnight, obviously, but eventually we as a community will start going to see movies that don't include the buffoonery, the comedy, the dancing and the singing and the stepping and fetching. It's my opinion. Could be wrong.
Right. But there's something just slightly off with your model in that, yes, you know, they will
like
throw out some trash. But those are loss leaders. You know what I mean? Those are loss leaders because we're talking about, you know, let's say Paramount, for example. They produce, let's say, 50 movies a year. Well, three or four of those movies make $500 million.
That's true. And those usually come out in the summer.
So they can afford to have, you know, 20% of their roster be utter trash.
You're right. I can't dispute that.
So I mean, it's a complex situation, and it's ridiculous. And you know, I understand his frustration. I've shared the same frustration. I think the difference between us in terms of the frustration from where I'm sitting is I was vocally frustrated about this stuff 15 years ago, and I'm not saying that he wasn't, but when I was at the same level of frustration that he was in, I started to look at things a little differently, and I started to study the business of Hollywood and try and figure out things from that perspective. And having come through it from that perspective, I'm telling you right now, today, Tyler is the best chance to break that barrier.
And one would hope. I see that. I would just hope that Tyler one day would realize that he can not be behind or in front of the camera and bring others up.
Right.
Oversee the operations instead of being inside the operation.
Yeah, at some point he's going to have to back off. He is going to have to back off. But what I've seen of him as a business person and a person, my hope is, and I don't think I'm far off the mark, that when he finally breaks that barrier, he's going to bring a whole bunch of folks with him. And we're going to start seeing young directors bringing out movies of quality. And we're going to see movies from the diaspora and Trinidad and, you know, parts of Africa and Jamaica. We're going to start seeing that because from what he's shown, he's different in Spike in that regard in terms of Tyler very clearly collects people and brings them with him. I don't get that impression from the behavior I've seen from Spike.
Yeah, because I think if my memory is correct, at one point, wasn't John Singleton like a protege of Spike? And
yep.
They no longer collaborate together for whatever reason?
Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
After Boys in the Hood, that was it.
Yeah.
And I remember the anecdote I was telling you when Spike was rightfully complaining about the lack of diversity in television. And, you know, everybody was like, you're right. And they started making an effort to diversify behind the scenes. And rather than, and my take on it is, rather than saying, as Spike, oh, cool, well, you know what, I know this young sister over here who's struggling, but she's really good, let's give her a shot, you know, this brother over here, you know, instead of spreading the wealth, he was like, okay, well, I'll direct this, and I'll direct that, and I'll do this, and I'll, you know, it was like he made all these complaints and this noise that needed to be made, but then reaped all the benefits for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that I've had with Spike for years, because this was back in the mid-90s. And I don't foresee Tyler being that type of person. But, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know the man personally.
Well, I don't know him personally either, but I would like to think from actions that he's exhibited on a public level, he's open to doing certain things that not just Spike Lee, but others just aren't willing to step up and do. But look, let's get. I want to move on from the movie studio discussion because we only have about just an hour left in the show, a little less than just an hour, and get on some of the topics that I want to cover tonight. Big one being, as we said last week, the manhunt was on for the bombers, and before the week
was
out,
crazy.
They caught them.
And how'd they catch them?
They caught the hell out of them.
Yes, they did.
One of our longtime listeners and contributors, my old friend Ed Lacey, lives up in Boston. And, of course, as I said before, I contacted him immediately once I heard about an explosion at the race and been keeping track of he and his family's living through that craziness. But I think it's amazing what social media was able to do in help bringing these perpetrators to ground. As soon as the FBI made it clear that they had photographs of people they wanted to associate with the crime and publish those pictures, social media spread the word across this country in moments. Listening and watching the broadcast, the FBI's live broadcast, I went to the FBI website, and the server all but crashed. It was so inundated with traffic as people were going after these images, trying to download these images, trying to get this information. And I'm just a guy with, you know, a home network, you know, with a DSL connection in my house, and I was eventually able to get in. A big news organization like, the New York Post, with more resources than I have at my disposal, was able to get in and publish on the front page of their publication a photograph of two people who had nothing to do with the bombing, had nothing to do with the incident. And as far as I can tell, I think they were actually at the marathon, but they were two completely innocuous gentlemen watching the race, two high school students, as a matter of fact.
Two
dark-skinned individuals, number one males, as they say here in Baltimore City. And information is powerful. Misinformation is dangerous. But those pictures went out across the interwebs so quickly. And, you know, they identified the suspects immediately, and lo and behold, they weren't of Middle Eastern descent. They weren't of dark skin.
Nope.
And what seems to be being proved right now from interviews that the legal system is getting from the survivor two knuckleheads who thought they wanted to be terrorists to make a statement. They weren't associated with any international group. They weren't associated with any sleeper cell. Just two fools who thought they were going to make a statement.
Were they even Muslim?
That they were. That they were. I'm glad you brought that up. They were Muslim. They are Chechnyans from
Chechnyans.
The former Chesty from the former Soviet Union, who immigrated to this country when they were young.
So their involvement with radical Islam and Chechnya was minimal at best.
Extremely. I mean, it's guilt by association. You know, they did, according to the survivor, they got their information on how to build the bombs from an Al-Qaeda-sponsored website, but they had no contact with anyone from Al-Qaeda or his brother Bob Qaeda. But what I think is so funny, and I haven't seen anyone else focus on this yet, is, well, let me just lay this groundwork first so you see where I'm coming from with this. You have people in Congress right now trying to associate immigration reform with the issue of these two young men and their crazed plan and the attack. Now, how you get immigration reform from this is a leap of epic proportion.
But that said, you know, one of my pet peeves has always been the scapegoating of brown immigrants. So at least now they're seeing that it just ain't the brown immigrants that can show their behinds.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you said that because that helps my segue. It's clear to me in my mind, it's so obvious that when we're talking immigration reform, we're talking south of the border immigrants coming into this country. We're not talking about Canadians. We're not talking about Asians. We're not talking about island Pacificers. We're talking about brown, Hispanic people. But a few months ago, at CPAC, we had this gem from my favorite tool, Donald Trump.
You're just not going to get those votes. Now, I say to myself, why aren't we letting people in from Europe? I have many friends, many, many friends, and nobody wants to talk this, nobody wants to say it, but I have many friends from Europe. They want to come in, people I know, tremendous people, hardworking people. They can't come in. I know people whose sons went to Harvard, top in their class, went to the Wharton School of Finance, great, great students. They happen to be a citizen of a foreign country. They learn, they take all of our knowledge, and they can't work in this country. You're just not going to get those
right
votes.
They can't. They don't work in this country, but they will blow this country up. When?
And like I said last time, clearly he ain't been in my neighborhood with all
the
Ukrainians I got running stuff.
But clearly Donald Trump is on some other kind of juice, because when you're talking immigration, you're talking about people from other countries anyway coming to this country. So for him to say we're talking about people from other countries, why can't people from other countries come in? That's the whole idea of immigration. Donald, and to say, let us allow more Europeans in. Last time I checked, Chechnya is in Europe. So we allow, obviously, we allow Chechnyans and Europeans in, and these young men come in and create the incident that we had at the Boston Marathon. And despite what the media wanted and tried so hard, oh, my God, they tried so hard the first couple of days to make this about Muslim terrorists, Middle Eastern terrorists, Islamic,
right, you know,
jihadists.
As my mother pointed out about Don King over on CNN.
Right? Right? I saw a clip. I couldn't find it today, but I found a clip. I saw a clip the other day that one of the CNN correspondents who was on the ground during the final hours of the manhunt, and she was in, what is it, Watertown? What is the name of Waterton?
Yeah, Watertown.
And she made the comment about the eerie silence that was on the street because everyone had been asked to stay in the house and not come out. And she said, it's like a bomb went off. Like, yeah, bitch.
Yeah, one did.
That's,
guess what?
I don't want to spoil your party. But this was not radical Islam. This was not a jihadist plot. And though I've heard people as learned as Chris Matthews on MSNBC say he can't believe, and others say they can't believe that these two fools were acting alone and there was no outside influence directing them, it happens. There are crazy people who do crazy stuff. There was no conspiracy about the guy who went into Newtown at Sandy Hook. There was no conspiracy with the man in Aurora, or no people outside of the couple of kids in Colorado at Columbine several years ago. Now, accordingly, this was a bomb. It was a terror attack. But that doesn't mean that they had to have outside influences to cause them to go and do what they did. As the line from the Dark Knight movie a few years ago, there are some people who just want to watch the world burn. And sadly, I think that's the case, what we had in Boston.
Well, you know, I'm glad they caught him alive because we need answers. I don't know if he's going to give them, but we need them. And the other thing that I was really, this is going to sound weird, happy about, I guess, is when his uncle got on television and just blew up the joint. Because, you know, he's such a sweet boy. I don't know what's wrong with him. And he was like, he's a loser. He's a shame. He's a disgrace. Turn your little ass in. I got nothing for you.
Gotta love it. You get, Uncle's old school. You could tell Uncle was old school. You bring shame,
right, Uncle,
on the family name. You bring shame on all Chechen people.
Right, right. The entire country of Chechnya has been shamed.
We ain't him. We love this country. I love
this. This is the best country ever. Right.
It's insane in its ridiculousness. We had here in Baltimore, you know, the local NBC affiliate was carrying the news feed from NBC during the day, during the manhunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Ryan Williams and the rest of the NBC news crew broadcasting live from Boston, Watertown, all areas and around, and they're, you know, they're giving you play-by-play of everything going on. And at noon, they said, we're going to cut to local broadcasting, your local affiliate, our local affiliate for your local news and update, and then we'll be back as soon as we can, and we will cut in if anything happens. So they cut to Channel 11 here in Baltimore, the local NBC affiliate. And what did they do? They show all the coverage that we've been seeing from NBC. So we don't know what's going on in our city, which they cut away to for us to find out. We just know what we're already being shown. Meantime, I'm getting news alerts from my other on my smartphone from my other sources about a shooting in Baltimore City, a gunfight, in the popular downtown part of Baltimore City the night before, an officer involved shooting, and you know the weather is actually happening outside. Nothing local. It's not as if we weren't already being inundated with what we were getting from the national feed. I think sometimes the country just totally gets caught up. They didn't even, well, at the time, I can't say that. I don't think the explosion had happened in Texas yet. I'm not sure. But you would think, given the opportunity, they would take advantage of letting us know what happened locally on our local news. They've had a problem here. Kamal has either gotten mad at me or her phone. There was a problem with her phone, but we lost Kamal. She should be back shortly. I'm going to go to some information I'm reading from one of the people logged in, a good friend of mine, Corbin. And, yeah, you're right, Corbin. Yeah, that the bomb was later that night. I had my timing off. One of the things that is amazing to me, interesting to me, with the younger brother being the survivor, and I love my brother dearly. He's younger than me. I have a couple of other brothers, stepbrothers, whom I love dearly. I would give kidneys to any of these men. But I think the survivor, the surviving bomber, is in a unique position to hopefully save his life from his standpoint. He should be throwing his dead brother under the bus with post haste. He should be jumping in saying, yeah, my brother led me to do all of that. He told me it was a smoke bomb. I didn't know. I was playing. I didn't know people were going to get killed. He should, right now, his lawyer's defense should be he was solely influenced by his older brother.
Oh, yeah, because his brother ain't here to defend himself because
ain't
he ran
here to defend
over
himself.
Him.
And like I just said, I don't know if you were back in with us before you got back in or not, Kamal. I love my brother with all my heart. But that brother's memory would be be smirking.
Right.
You know?
But you and I talked about dropping dime. I already told you my motto. And by the way,
exactly,
I don't know what
right.
happened. The phone just died. Well, it just hung up. It didn't die. It's full battery. I don't know.
Maybe Donnie's connected. He might have somebody kill your phone.
Maybe that's what happened to him, too, because it was really weird how it happened.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the situation is this, whoa, this man is going to, at best, spend the rest of his life behind bars, if he's lucky.
Yeah, if he's lucky. You know, he might just want to just die in the hospital because they're going to jack him up in prison. because children were maimed and killed.
Children maimed and killed. The nation was gripped by the crime. There's going to be national attention on him in a negative way, on a level of which, you know, the guy in Florida can't even conceive. The man who killed Tavon.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a man who killed one teenager, as opposed to a person who made the country, the world, think we were under a 9/11 copycat attack. The only saving grace he has is that I have yet to hear his name pronounced the same way twice.
Wasn't me.
No. I'm Zvarnev. No, I'm Zarnev. That was somebody else. That was Zernevian.
Right.
Wasn't me. Look, lost in all of the hoopla of the bombing and the capture and killing of the bomber and his the capture of his brother, was that our United States Congress, U.S. Senate, was able to kill the weakest, lamest, most bare-bone legislation for gun control that they could propose. You had a bill proposed that was so watered down that it should have passed muster by everybody who could vote, and these fools couldn't even vote it in.
I'm so disgusted.
I mean, the bill itself, as it was written, was a joke. It tried to appeal to everybody and appease everybody just to get passage. And even at that, even if the bill was written as it should have been written, you had 88 to 91% of Americans in support of it. Has been said on national news and in national media and amongst ourselves, you can't get 90% of Americans to agree the sky is blue.
Right.
And yet,
and unfortunately, the support is starting to wane a little bit.
I think this frustration is, the issue starts to lose legs, and I think that's part of the long race strategy of the Wayne LaPierre's and the hardcore members of the NRA governing body. That's their long game.
Yeah.
People are going to get sick of it and just let it go.
The longer you drag it out.
Yeah. But here was an opportunity to put real teeth into something, to even on a symbolic level, to say, look, we ain't really going to do anything, but we're going to act like we're going to do something. And they couldn't get that right. Dick Corbin just said he couldn't take a rubber band pistol from his daughter with that nonsense before. And it's true. And you got 90% of the country saying something needs to be done, and the Senate, the United States Senate, once again, the group that couldn't get right wrong, couldn't get wrong right. Couldn't get wrong right. They couldn't even pass that.
What is wrong with having a universal database to keep criminals from getting easy access to firearms? Not saying take guns away from anybody. Not saying restrict gun ownership. Just saying before you can purchase a weapon, you need to prove that you have no criminal background and you have the ability to be responsible with owning that weapon. And there's no
right.
And there's a grandfather clause. If you already have it, you've got it.
And guess what? If some of these checks and balances have been in place, we might, well, it's still early. We still might be able to. But, you know, we might be able to find out where these guns came from and hold somebody responsible.
And, you know, that's something I'm a strong advocate for. We lost Kamal again. I'm a strong advocate of having people who purchase guns register that they have these guns in case they are stolen, in case they are taken from them by a criminal element, and hopefully they can be tracked back to where they came from. And no, there's no panacea. There's no perfect answer. There's no way to show that to keep all people safe, keep guns away from everybody who's not supposed to have them. Yeah, criminals will be able to subvert the system, but guess what? Criminals are subverting the system now. But there is a criminal element that is using the existing system to purchase guns that they should not be able to get hold of. And Kamal,
so,
I'm not going to call
all,
shenanigans on your phone line.
Right. First
I'm
of all, there's going to be some repercussions and consequences because I don't know what's going on with this phone.
And it's not
but
your
I'm not
phone.
Happy. No, it's not my phone.
I'm watching the switchboard. We're losing callers and they're coming back in. I'm getting notification that calls are being dropped. So maybe there's a problem with the technology tonight.
And I paid the bill, so.
You paid that bill. The medical bill you ain't paying, but you paid that bill.
This bill I pay. My hospital bill, I ain't paying. This one, I paid. But, I mean, you know, because I dropped, I don't know specifically all that you said, but I guess to echo what I think your point was, yeah, there would be some trace of somebody owning it at some point.
Exactly. That's where I went with that. Track it back. Now, yeah, Sandy Hook, it would not have prevented that kid from getting the guns from his mother, but it may have prevented his mother from purchasing the guns if she honestly put on an application that she had a son who had a mental disorder that was living with her and had easy access to the weapon.
And again, we know how I am. Yes, my son is crazy as hell, but that should not reflect upon me. It was nothing I did. This is all from his daddy.
The daddy that you found so amazingly attractive that you slept with him and made a baby.
Right, but that was before I knew his ass was crazy. I cannot be held responsible for that. Signed.
I'm sorry. You know my feeling. Ain't no diggity like crazy diggity, and crazy diggity can get all the good-looking women. If a brother can lay it down, then he can get the finest woman in the house. So he may be crazy, but if he cute, he just a little crazy. You know he cray-cray.
Girl, don't pay him no mind.
Don't pay me no mind. Look at those eyes. He got those eyes. He got those bedroom eyes. Yeah, one of those eyes isn't looking straight at you all the time, but he got them eyes.
Girl, just look to the left. It's all right.
But how do you justify that as a member of the congressional body? How can you justify to your constituency, the majority of which is saying, do what we sent you to Washington to do. Here is our mandate. How can you justify voting against that?
Because they're hoping that we're not paying attention.
Well, this is one you can't miss. This is a large target.
Yeah, it's one we can't miss. But you know what? We as a society have long had a short attention span.
What'd you say?
You and I will remember this. I'm remembering it 2014. That's when I want people to really remember it, in 2014, and then 2016. But these people ain't gonna remember it in September. God forbid something bad.
They're not gonna remember it in June.
Well, I was trying to get folks a little.
Shoot somebody else. They're not gonna remember it come June.
And that's what they're counting on. I mean, like I said, the polling is already showing that it's going down, and it's not because people no longer agree with it. They're just sick of the crap altogether, and they're just like, whatever, I don't even care.
Yeah, and it will start to be one of those issues where people just get fed up and move on, unless someone else shoots up another school, more children die. There's a show on HBO called Vice.
Comes called
on
what?
After Bill Maher, Vice. Comes on after Bill Maher's show on Friday evening. It's a half-hour documentary, news documentary program. Think of it as a half-hour, 60-minute program. And Vice is a news magazine that goes around and does these exposés anyway. But they are the people who sponsored Dennis Rodman going to North Korea, Vice magazine. But Vice, the show, they go around the country and around the world exposing different things. And last week's show, they did a segment on a school in New Mexico, a private Christian school run by a couple who not only have armed security in the school, but some of the teachers are armed, and they teach the children that if an armed attacker comes into the school, they should en masse attack the attacker to take the gun away from the attacker. The superintendent
and
of
you know
the
what
school
else?
Is...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Superintendent
it would just remind me of
is a re-
okay, I'm quiet.
He's a retired state trooper from New Mexico. And his mantra to the children is, you're going to die anyway. You might as well die fighting.
What? I don't want my child nowhere near him.
The school, as I can see, goes from kindergarten probably up to high school. And they had the wee little kids hiding under the tables with, you know, they do drills like we used to do fire drills. They do drills. There's a bad man coming, the kids hide under chairs, and the older kids attack the attacker. But the woman who's the principal of the school, who's also the wife of the superintendent, she made the statement on the program that if those kids at Sandy Hook had been trained like her kids are trained, some of them would have survived.
That's just crazy. You know what? That's just like all these stupid people who are going around saying, you know, if everybody had a gun, you know, all those people wouldn't have been killed. I'm sorry. Your gun was going to stop a randomly placed backpack how?
Once the explosion went off, you were going to start shooting what?
Right. And what do you mean if those kids had been trained like yours? Seriously? These are children, police officers, who are trained to be in stressful situations, shoot the wrong person. And you think a 7-year-old?
6- and 7-year-olds, yep.
Children aren't equipped to handle that type of stress and decision making. You're talking about the same people who eat chalk.
Wait a minute. I thought we were finished talking about the U.S. Senate.
You know, these are people who pick their nose and eat it, and you expect them to have a right decision about how to use a gun and when. Get the out of here with that BS.
Now, Kamal, I'm gonna call it like I see it, and you know that's what I do. And to our listening audience, I apologize if what I'm going to say offends some people. But you know where I'm coming from when I say this. The shock of all shocks to me on this show is the couple who run the school are black.
Oh, Lord Jesus, build a fence. Build a fence, an electrified fence. What the hell is wrong with them? Somebody get Mookie and them. We need an intervention.
I watched this segment with my mouth wide open. I swear to God, a dragonfly could have gone down my throat. I could not believe. And the woman, the principal, she's walking around with a gun in her purse in the school. And she's demonstrating at the range how she can shoot. She can't even hold the freaking gun. And it's obviously a short, like it's like a 380, which is a very small handgun. It has killing power, but it's going to require a good hit to kill someone at close range with a 380 or a lot of bullets.
Where the school at?
New Mexico.
She says with her preposition dangling. Well, you know, New Mexico is close to Arizona. Maybe some of the crazy then scooched off.
I was literally, seriously flabbergasted.
And that's a big word.
You're advocating, and people are sending their children to the school. And you're trying to tell me that you are teaching my child to jump up, and because he knows his classmates are going to do the same thing, right? They're going to rush a man coming in the door with an automatic weapon or any weapon and jump on him and fight to wrestle the weapon away from him?
Mm-mm.
Get the hell out of here.
Any parent with any common sense will teach their child to run like hell. You see a grown person coming in there looking to do damage? Uh-uh, baby. Run and hide. Because what is your little 60 pounds going to do against a 200-pound man? Or a 140-pound man? Or a woman? Please.
Or a 3-ounce bullet.
More importantly. Why
Instead
would you normally send
money.
Your children into harm's way like that?
Exactly.
That's child abuse. Somebody needs to call CPS.
Instead of investing or trying to invest or trying to come up with funds to arm teachers in the schools in these classrooms, how about putting some money into some security doors in the school? So if someone comes into school, an announcement can be made, an attacker is in the building, and teachers can lock their doors down so no one can just break in from the outside. How about that?
Right.
How about keep the kids sequestered and safe instead of telling them to attack someone who's coming to do them bodily harm? Because if you're going to make it easy for me to shoot you, why shouldn't I shoot you? You think It's survival instinct, and we have to fight against it as adults. But when the hunter goes in the woods and starts pulling the trigger, most of the other animals don't come running around to see who's getting shot. This is a mess.
Right.
You need to check out the episode.
Where'd Bob go? I'm out. They done shot Bob.
Bye, Bob. Gonna miss you, Bob. But I'll be here to miss you. I mean, I can't even fathom who came up with this idea and what parent would say, oh, you know, that sounds like a great idea. Let me send my children to this school. That's insanity.
Right,
total
that mentality
insanity.
Alone. It's like, where they do that at? I mean, and part of it is, it's a sad testimony to the society that parents, albeit parents who aren't wrapped too tight, feel that this is the way they have to teach their children to survive a day at school. But you have to put things in perspective. Yes, it's a possibility. A probability? No.
No, because the likelihood of being killed in a school shooting is around the same probability of being hit by lightning.
Right. Can it happen?
But it does happen.
Yeah.
Let's not be naive. It does happen.
Right. Can it happen? Yeah. Will it happen? Probably not. But I don't want my child to live in that fear. You know, I don't want to tell her to not recognize danger. But she needs to spend her day reading, writing, and arithmetic. And
mm-hmm.
music, PE, recess, whatever. She's 10. You know, her world needs to revolve around, oh, my God, you know, they're serving pizza at lunch again.
Oh, my God,
it does
I
not,
got 9 nuggets again.
Right. Well, you know how we roll. That's what her world needs to be, making sure that she gets 10 nuggets and sweet and sour sauce every time, not just occasionally like they do now. What she doesn't need to be concerned with is how to deal with somebody busting in her classroom with a gun. Let the adults worry about that. Let the teachers and the principals and the staff worry about that, but not the baby.
And you have armed security in the school. And now you're going to arm the teachers as well. And as we've discussed, it's never a bad idea to have guns with teachers who are stressed out.
Never a bad idea.
Never a bad idea. And this woman is walking around with a gun in her purse.
And, you know,
okay.
I don't have PTSD, but I'm constantly stressed. And I really don't like most people's children. And while I would never, ever, ever shoot a child, it might cross my mind that I got a gun and I could just put just one little bullet in his ass and it won't hurt that much.
Right. It's attitude adjustment.
Yeah, you know.
That's all it is.
And
attitude adjustment.
You know, shoot him in his pinky toe. That'll learn him. Since I can't
time.
Choke him.
He will know next time.
Right. You're going to learn today. Miss Larsula is not one to be trifled with. Let my reputation precede me. You know she'll shoot you in the ass.
They say, break yourself, fool. It's Miss Larsula, son.
Right. You know, when she says quiet, she means quiet the first time, not the fourth. She'll shoot you in the ass.
She don't mean quiet down. She means shut the fuck up.
Right.
That's the scary part. That's the scary part.
You know what happened to little Johnny.
No, what happened to little Johnny? I don't see him around here anymore. That's right.
That's right. Let that be a lesson learned.
Because
he called her a witch.
He had ADHD. No, he had Miss Laura Sewell popped a cap in his ass. That's what he had.
Right. Don't whatever.
And of course,
you do, don't
as
call
you pointed out, which you've pointed out quite poignantly, is little kids never go looking for people's purses, ever.
Ever.
And I'm sure a normal daily crisis that happens at the school would never facilitate the principal leaving her office without her purse and making sure her door was locked and some little kid wandering in and go, ooh.
And those kids would never, ever, ever call me Camel.
Because those little kids wouldn't be 3,500 miles away from your ass. That's why.
Is that what it is?
Because I have my car. My car did it.
I'd have to learn them.
It was my car. It was my car.
I'd have to learn them.
It was my car. It was my car. So listen, I'm going to do something kind of unique here tonight. I'm going to self-promo next week's show, and I'm going to let you do it. I think next week's show is very important and very powerful, and I want to make sure everyone knows ahead of time what we're going to be talking about and why. So without further ado, Kamal, please tell us before your phone gets cut off again.
Right, before
show.
The phone gets cut off. So next week we're going to have several people on the show who are involved in a vicious, vicious cyberbullying situation. We will have the woman who is the victim, and I don't like to use the word victim, but that's what she is in this case.
Tell everybody what cyberbullying is, because there are a lot of people who don't know what cyberbullying is.
So what cyberbullying is when you use the Internet to bully and harass somebody, to continuously send them email, to message them in Facebook, and sometimes threaten their lives or call them names, or in this case, start a vicious lie about somebody. And the lie is so salacious and vicious that it takes off like wildfire. And it's like try to put a genie back in the bottle. You just can't. And so in this particular case, and these are grown folks doing this, not kids. A woman by the name of Sonia Neal had a rumor started about her on the Internet by the other woman. By the bunny boiler, as I like to call her, because she
Ooh,
is a fatal attraction.
I'm going to have to use that one.
Yeah, bunny boiler. Right. So the bunny boiler to get back at Sonia started a rumor on the Internet saying that Sonia was HIV positive and was purposely having unprotected sex with dozens of men. And the way she did this is she created a fake Facebook profile pretending to be Sonia, saying all this. And I won't go into too many details because we're going to talk about it next week. We're going to talk to Sonia next week. But because that is something that's so horrifying, you know, people ran with it. Oh, my gosh, she's doing what? That's nasty, blah, blah, blah. And it was you know, passed on to this person and that person and, you know, it was put on different websites. And all this was done in, almost a year and a half ago, the Facebook stuff. There was prior harassment before all the Facebook stuff started, but it just ratcheted up. So we're gonna talk to Sonia. We're going to talk to Vanessa Eady. Vanessa Eady is a woman who went to high school with Sonia, hadn't seen her in 12 years, wasn't even her ride-or-die chick, but contacted her about this and found out the truth. And then she decided to help her out and try and protect her and get the word out there. And the person who is the bunny boiler has since turned on Vanessa. So now Vanessa is dealing with all this drama as well. And, you know, people say, oh, it's just Facebook, it's just this, it's just that, just forget about it. But when I, this is a horrible, horrible campaign. People have shown up at people's houses. Jobs have been lost. CPS has been threatened to be called. Addresses have been publicized. Okay? So, you know, we want to talk about her situation and hopefully how we can help her persevere, because the Bunny Boiler incident happened 3 years ago. You know, and it's all this stuff is still going on, and you know, the Facebook stuff, like I said, happened about a year and a half ago. But the initial incident was almost 3 years ago. And we were also going to have the owner of the Mike DVD website, and he has a blog that talks about just about everything. And he happened to be one of the first people to post the Facebook, the fake Facebook message. And that was part of how it spread. He immediately put up a retraction when he found out about the truth. However, he became, I don't want to call him a victim, but she started in on him too. The first time he posted that was May of last year. Bunny Boiler posted last week on this blog. She's keeping it alive. So, and we know that cyberbullying is near and dear to our house, because our hearts, because you are ready to knuckle up and come help my baby out. So, you know,
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't
know what you're talking about, right? But you know,
no,
right? I mean, but, and I think it's an important topic because it's new media. You know, we didn't have email and Facebook, and you know, hell, we didn't have Facebook even 10 years ago. So, you know,
well, we didn't have, we really didn't have
territory
that tight 10 years ago. But I will say this, and just as was proven by what the FBI was able to do with social media this week in helping to apprehend the Boston Marathon bombers, the internet and social media can be very important and very dangerous. And
right.
The fact that someone can use it to besmirch you on a global level is,
and this is
that,
global.
Yeah, this is something that real legislation should, you know, should be enacted upon.
And let me remind people, the people involved in this are in their 30s. Bunny Boiler
grown
is like 31.
People. Grown ass people.
Right. These are some grown folks destroying and being destroyed. And I maintain that if Sonia 130 but was like 14, this story might be different. Some mother might be bearing her child, because this is how vicious this is. And this, you know, not even what the public sees, just the vicious emails that come through day and night, the voice memos. Yeah, Bunny Boiler will sit there, and, well, we'll talk about it next week.
Well, I know one thing, not that I have ever done this, but if someone cyberbullies my baby, it's going to be on and popping, and I'll never be able to get a gun again.
You know.
We will talk about this next week. I cannot wait. And I may have to play a little devil's advocate and ask some questions, but I firmly am in Sonia's corner.
Understood.
We need a lot of people, ladies, men, young and old, listen in, call in. This should be one of the best shows we've had this year.
I agree.
Probably,
yeah, do call in. And I should point out, this is the first radio interview Sonia's done. So we've got an exclusive here.
Hot dog. All right, Kamal. All right, America.
All right, America.
Keep
catch y'all on the flip.
On the flip, flip.
Love y'all. Thank you, thank you.
Here I go. So I'm back up in.